This is Joy Day Sanctuary, the 29th day of devotion, 56 AF. This sanctuary and all of its parts is copyright Maitreya Ajatama Bhagavan Sri Babajan, all Khalil the Friend, all rights are reserved. Om Soham Dattvamasi, Om Jai Bhagwanji.
Beloved Universal God, we offer this inner divine communion and all results of it to you. We surrender completely to you. We submit totally to your divine will. Jai Bhagwanji.
Jai
Om Soham Dattvamasi, Om Jai Bhagwanji. Om Parapara Tat Savitur Varenyam Bargo Devasya Di Mahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat. Om Asato Ma Sad Gamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotir Gamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jai Bhagwanji. Om Universal God, all radiant universal light, as we turn our minds to you, fill our hearts and minds and lives with your clear light. From the unreal, show us the real. From darkness, bring us the light. From death, lead us to immortality and perfect final union with you. Om, peace, peace, peace. Victory to that beloved universal I am that I am, which you are. Today, because this is a recording, you can't see, so I'll describe. We're sitting in the sanctuary, in ordinary chairs, in a circle. I have my shoes on. I'm wearing my street clothes. There's a reason for this, and it is because we've got to sort out what's real from what's unreal, and sort out what makes our religion accessible to the ordinary person, rather than only to those who can appreciate customs like taking shoes off before entering, and wearing special clothes, and things of the sort. This doesn't mean we're going to get rid of these things, but it means that probably the place that they have is with those who are experienced and steady in being Maitreyans. Not necessarily as something that we present people with immediately. I mean, I don't know, it's something that I don't understand thoroughly, and I don't know. But I do ask myself, should we drive somebody away from this door, from the door of God's eternal universal religion, because they are uncomfortable having their shoes off in public? Should we only make ourselves accessible to those who have sort of the loose, free, hippie personality, who are happy to take their shoes off before they come into a place such as this? Or do we make ourselves more accessible to those who are more in the mainstream of society? And how far do we go? Do we abandon our customs and traditions? I say not. Do we lose the goodness and the beauty of what we have for the sake of numbers? And again, I say not. I think there are places when we need to present to people a face that's easy to adopt, that's easy to follow, and that has to do with not making people do things that are overtly uncomfortable to them or unsettling to them. That's not my way. My way is just to do what I do. And in fact, I think our shawls and our taking off of our shoes and our customs and our traditions.
Call them 310-534-4973.
One thing we should not do is allow cell phones in this meeting. But I don't know the answer. I do know that we can't abandon our inner traditions and customs and our ways. I know that we can't abandon the things that are real to us. The world will do everything it can to distort and destroy what's real with us. Even the simple syllable Om. We no sooner began to propagate our religion as it was in all of its fullness than some idiot in Japan came up with an Om cult, and we had to put aside this beautiful and sublime syllable Om or be identified with this violent fool. So there are no rules. There are no set rules. I know that we have to hang on to the essence of what is real with us. We can't abandon it, and we shouldn't abandon it. It's a matter, as it always has been, and if you look back, you'll find that I've spoken on this way back in the early days. It's a matter of making the steps into our religion easy enough and small enough that people can take them. You have no idea how bound to this society most people are and how fearful they are of doing anything, even in private, that goes against its conventions. And so we have to decide, I have to decide how much we can popularize our religion in presenting it and still maintain the essence of it. But we can go and rent an auditorium, and I can put on my holy clothes, my yellow clothes. You can wear your Soldiers of the Light uniforms, And we can perform a magnificent, or what to us at least is a magnificent ceremony. And a lot of people might come and look at that, just like they go to look at the Dalai Lama. But not a lot of people join the Dalai Lama because they're not about to put on saffron robes and walk around the street like a bunch of Hare Krishnas. People will accept handshakes, even pranams, words that are special to us. But when it comes to putting themselves in the public view with the possibility of ridicule, the force of darkness has them by the heart. We have to reach people where they are and bring them to where we are. Obviously, we cannot reach people where we are. Einstein said, "You cannot solve a problem with the same mentality that you had when you created it." And we cannot reach this world by sticking it in their face, our entire ceremony. We can't. That's why we're sitting the way we sat when we began. When we began, we sat in metal chairs in the middle of my living room at 204 North Catalina with no shrine, no banner, no shawls, no pendants, nothing. Yet we began. And we grew. Who knows? If we had not put the shawls and the all of the things that are so precious to us up front, maybe we would have continued to grow. At that time, we had a meeting for those who were non-initiates, not Maitreyans, not yet Maitreyans. We called them aspirants, because I believe that everyone aspires to perfect final union with God. So anyone who's not a Maitreyan, I consider to be an aspirant to being one, whether they know it or not. Yes, it's presumptuous. I think it's a good presumption. And we had a meeting for aspirants, and we had a meeting for those who were initiates, Ajahn-Mahdi, Maitreyans, devotees, disciples. You know, all the words should not get in the way. The words should not interfere with what we are. You can call a flower by some Latin name, and it still doesn't change the fact that it's a rose. But we are failing miserably in our quest to get God's promise to all souls and all souls to God. I read these magazines like the Church Executive magazine, these Christian magazines. And they talk about branding and all of this awful stuff. And they talk about having a tagline and all of this awful stuff. Well, I read their taglines, the things that they say about themselves, like, "We are the crossroads." Well, and I look at ours, which is God's promise to all souls and all souls home to God. I look at the name of their church, which is 1-2-Stone. And then I look at the name of that God's given us for His eternal universal religion, which is God's eternal universal religion. Yes, other people use the term Maitreyan, but we will overwhelm them. But there's only one way we'll overwhelm them. We're not going to overwhelm them in court. We're not going to overwhelm them by ranting against them. The only way we can overwhelm them and establish the name that God has given to me and as the Maitreya, the friend of all souls, and to you as those who follow the Maitreya, namely Maitreyans, is by use. It has to appear everywhere. It has to appear everywhere in context and firmly attached to Maitreya, the friend of all souls, and the one universal God, Parapara, and God's eternal universal religion. That's the only way to establish it. Use is the only way to establish something. Anything else is folly. Even copyright and trademark laws recognize this. If somebody else has used the term, or if somebody's used the term widely, then basically they own it. Mm-hmm. If somebody else has a piece of paper but doesn't use it, they don't own it. Okay. What does that mean? That means writing letters. Letters to everything and everywhere. The New York Times, the LA Times, Easy Reader, the Weekly, the LA Weekly, every magazine and newspaper you can get your hands on, of one sort or another. I don't care what topic you write on, as long as you write it from a Maitreyan point of view. Don't be presenting your own personal prejudice as a Maitreyan point of view. And you have to say, so-and-so, Maitreyan, follower of Maitreya, the friend of all souls, as your title. If it's about America, right in there, the slogan that Ela made up, I'm a Maitreyan, America is my holy land. This religion was born in America. The only religion that was born in America, the only true religion that was born in America. Mormonism started in America, but it actually began by some apparition from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. They're the closest, but they don't even match up. Our religion was literally born in America, as I was. Does that mean it's exclusive to America? No, but it does mean that it's an American religion. Mm-hmm. This is our holy land. Yeah. The same as the Christians claim Jerusalem is their holy land. This is our holy land. It's not just a country anymore. It's a holy land. Put it out. Put it out in ways that people can digest. Don't always be opposing things. Be supporting things. Yeah. Write into these newspapers and magazines and periodicals things that you support and why you support them, because our religion says, because Maitreya teaches, because Maitreya says, because God has said to us that this is good. To always be complaining is only half of the battle. Mm-hmm. Complain about evil. Complain about the force of darkness. Oh yeah, everybody will pick up the term and use it. They already are. You might as well just not worry about it. But be sure to say what a Maitreyan is. A Maitreyan is one who follows Maitreya, the friend of all souls. And there's only one Maitreya, the friend of all souls, regardless of what anybody else claims. And that is Ajahn Bhagavan Sri Bhagavan Akhalil, the friend. Or just Bhagavan, the friend. Use the terms the friend and Maitreya, the friend of all souls, interchangeably so that they get identified. Put it out. Interject it everywhere you can without being a bigot or a fool. There's nothing more foolish than the Bible-thumping Christian evangelist that drives away more people than he draws. I understand his zeal and I appreciate it. But it's counterproductive. Sit down in groups like this with your shoes on and your street clothes, probably without your shawl, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
But by putting a shawl over your head, as beautiful and as wonderful as it is to us, you're going to attract hippies.
Oh my gosh.
And people who are nonconformists.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are rebels. Well, we like people who are nonconformists, and we like people who are rebels. The problem is that they can't conform to us and our ways, and they will rebel against everything we do, just as you do. And we'll go nowhere. We are here to rebel against the force of darkness alone, not against one another, not against me, not against our religion, as you have done. You are, in great measure, rebels without a cause. Your cause is purely rebellion. Well, it was fine when you were 15 and 16 and 17 and 18. And it's still fine to rebel against things that are worthy of being rebelled against. But when you rebel against your religion, when you rebel against your Maitreya, when you rebel against your community, you might as well just take a sharp knife and cut your right hand off with your left. What's the point in rebelling against the thing that you've committed your life to? Go with it. I know it's going to grate against everything that you are because you've been rebelling all of your lives. But there comes a time when you have to choose what you're going to rebel against, and it can't be your own. You must not rebel against your own. And whether you like it or not, or whether you like each other or not, you are your own. And so am I, and so is this religion, and so is our cause. Quit rebelling against the thing. Quit biting the hand that feeds you. You're not a dog. Don't grovel. Nobody asked. I would never ask you to grovel. I would never ask you to be mindless or witless. But stop rebelling against the thing, the very thing that you've pledged your life to. Stop fighting against yourself. And that's what's happening here. You're struggling against yourself. One half of you is the dark side, and one half of you is the Maitreyan side. And you're constantly fighting against yourself. I said yesterday, I'm going to say it to all of you, this is not about you. It never was about you. It will never be about you. I know that's not political. I know that's not good salesmanship. I'm supposed to say, oh, it's all about you. It is not about you. It is about God, and it is about all suffering souls in this world, and beyond it, if the truth be known. But at least within this world, that's what it's about. It's not about you. If you wash your face, your hands become clean. If you just wash your hands, your face stays dirty. It said, a rising tide lifts all ships. Mm-hmm. And that means that if we raise up God's eternal universal religion, we will raise up all souls. It's not about you. And anybody who walks into this religion has to know, it's not about you. It never has been about you. It never will be about you. Get over it. Get over yourself. Get over yourself. The Beatles song says, when you've seen beyond yourself, you may find peace of mind. And isn't that is so true? Yourself is, your selfish self is what's tormenting you and tormenting us. And you'll always think that it's right, and you'll always think that it's righteous, and you'll always think that you've been wronged. Every one of you do it, day in and day out. In little ways or big ways. It's destroying us. Get over it. Put it away. What has it ever gotten you in your entire life? What have you ever, what do you have right now? Put it out on the floor here. Put it out on the table. What do you have for all of your struggle and your fight for yourself? What do you have? I venture to say you don't even have dignity. I venture to say you don't even have courage. You know, courage sometimes, in fact many times, isn't fighting against something, it's fighting for something. You think of courage as fighting against something. But in truth, courage is fighting for something. And who are the people that are revered and remembered in this world? It's the people who fought for something. Mm-hmm. We have this guy that we know who is a former Marine. I won't even say his name because you know who he is. And at one of our meetings, when we were assembling the parade, he said very loudly, "I'm a socialist." No, not a socialist, a communist. And he's so proud that he served in Korea. And the next time we come up against this radical leftism of his, I'm going to say to him, "How do you think your dead buddies that you left in Korea would feel about you being a communist when that's what they died fighting against? And they died fighting for freedom for the Koreans. What do you think his dead buddies would think of him saying, I'm almost a communist, or I'm a communist? They'd shoot him down on his tracks. They'd despise him. And yet he thinks he's being his own person. Because the government didn't treat him right or something. I don't know. But you guys have a lot of that in you too. We love being rebels. It seems so glorious to be a rebel against something. What about being a rebel for something? We must never turn on one another. No matter how wrong you are, or how wrong you think you are, you must never turn on one another. You've got to support one another. The ancient commandment, the first commandment of religion, is to love one another. What does that mean? Doesn't have anything to do with sex, certainly. Doesn't have anything to do with romance, certainly. What you love determines who you are. All the way down to saying, I love ice cream. What you love determines who you are far more than what you hate. You've got to love God. You've got to love your religion. You've got to love the Maitreya. Not because I'm the Maitreya. I would love to have somebody else be Maitreya the friend, because I could be such a devotee as you've never seen. I long for it. You've got to love one another. Not because your personality meshes so nicely with the other person, or the other person treats you so kindly. That's not love. That's hedonism. I heard somebody say, you love the person that treats you the best. That's pure hedonism. That's not love. Yeah. You've got to love one another. If you don't love one another, you'll never be able to hang together well enough to keep them from hanging you separately. You've got to love your religion as a way of life. And ultimately, you've got to love all souls. I gave up perfect final union with God twice and made my vow of compassion that I would never again enter into perfect final union with God until I had seen every last soul safely into perfect final union with God before me. For one reason and one reason only. It wasn't philosophy, it wasn't technology, it wasn't science, it wasn't theology. It was out of a love for all souls. What you love, there your heart is. And where your heart is, there your mind is. And where your mind is, there everything else is. If you're having trouble with one another, it's because you don't love one another. If you're having trouble with your religion, it's because you don't love your religion sufficiently. If you're having trouble with me, it's because you don't love the Maitreya. And I say the Maitreya, you notice I didn't say because you don't love me. Because I have a personality in this world too, and I sure don't expect that everybody's going to like it. But beyond this personality, beyond this body, beyond this mind, I am Maitreya, the friend of all souls. Not by my own choosing, but by God's. Just as I'm humbled and embarrassed by receiving the commander's coin from General Petraeus, commander of our forces. I am absolutely humbled and embarrassed by God choosing me to be the Maitreya. Maybe one of the reasons I'm not a good Maitreya. I should be arrogant. I should be like the Dalai Lama or like some of the other people. Now, people would say the Dalai Lama is not arrogant. No, but he is the Dalai Lama through and through. Mm-hmm. And he's not in the least embarrassed by it. Mm. Oh. I'm not embarrassed by being the Maitreya, but I am overawed and humbled by it. You have to love, and if you don't, all is lost. In fact, that's the way darkness deals with God's eternal universal religion. I've told you that dividing the holy community is the highest crime that you can commit. It's worse than murder. Now, murder's bad. Don't do that. But dividing the holy community is worse than murder, because a divided community will never conquer the force of darkness and will never get God's promise to all souls and will never get all souls home to God. You must have unity. And that means giving up some individuality. Not all of it, by any means. You have to be individuals. In our pledge of an Adhyatmavadi, our pledge of a Maitreyan, it says, though I be the last Maitreyan, I will fight on to victory. You can't do that if you're a mass-minded person. This is not communism. I do not want groupthink. But as free and independent individuals, you have to be willing to exercise your will over your emotions and love one another and love God and love your religion and love the Maitreya. And above all, and I say above all because it's so intimately bound up with our holy mission to get God's promise to all souls and all souls home to God. It's so intimately bound up with our holy mission to create divine critical mass so that God will place his new covenant and supreme promise in the hearts of all souls. It is so thoroughly bound up with our cause of bringing forth the age of universal God's pure divine truth on earth. I say it above all. You've got to love all souls. You don't have to love what they make themselves into, and you don't have to love what they do. And you shouldn't love evil unless you can love it to death. But you do have to love all souls. And don't forget you're one of them. As you make the sea of God's eternal universal religion rise, so will you be lifted, as will all of the other souls in this world. And as you bring it down, so do you bring down not just yourself, but all other souls. It's a tough burden that you've taken on. But it's a joyous burden if you practice it rightly. If you practice it rightly, your heart will be filled with love for goodness and truth and the light. And if you love goodness, then you will do battle with the force of darkness, with the sharp sword of universal God's pure divine truth, with great courage and honor. But without love, nothing happens. The force of darkness has degraded love to an MTV sex video. Forget it. That is not love. It's sheer lust. It's sheer hedonism. It's sheer greed and selfishness. Love transcends all and raises all. True love, spiritual love, not physical love. And spiritual love becomes manifested in the world as physical power and as physical affection. And so you should sit down in small groups like this. with one other person. Not just to do some mechanical procedure called interdivine communion. Remember, interdivine communion existed. Mm-hmm. Not just within me, but within our religion before I ever wrote it down. You never knew it. You just knew that we did something and it was good. Mm-hmm. Look back to 1977, 78, 79, 80. And we never did all of the steps every time. We did what was right to be done when it was right to do it. See, that's not just a little step in interdivine communion. It's a way of life for Maitreyans. To do what is right to be done when it is right to do it. To live by God's interdivine guidance. Insight, revelation, and guidance. And to do what's right to be done when it's right to do it. And to be ready and willing to be the first one to recognize, admit, acknowledge when you've let your ego get in the way of what's right to be done when it's right to do it. If somebody else has to admonish you, then you fail. You should be the first one to admonish yourself, privately and publicly. Of course, if you don't see it, you don't see it. God has given us one another so that we can look into one another and see ourselves as mirrors, as we look into a mirror. And when somebody else says, I see this, maybe it's just their weirdness. Maybe it's just their bias. And maybe it isn't. That's why we do not reject criticism. We do not respond defensively to criticism. We say, thank you, brother. Thank you, sister. I will look into my heart to the best of my ability with God's help and the help of the Maitreya and see if what you're seeing has merit. These are things that have gotten lost along the way. It's not our ceremony that's gotten lost. Ceremonies and rituals are the least of religion. Ceremonies, rituals are the least of religion. Customs and traditions are the glue that holds a people together, and so do ceremonies and rituals, but they're the least of our religion. When they are the outer manifestations of that inner love and that inner truth and light that should be burning constantly like an eternal flame within every Maitreyan, then they're good and they're wonderful. They're beautiful. Does it matter whether you have the shawl? Does it matter whether the shawl is on right? Does it matter whether it's even a shawl? What about just grabbing an old towel and putting it over your head? Well, if love is in your heart for God and your religion and Maitreya and for your brothers and sisters, for the holy community as a community, not just a loose collection of people, and for all souls, then an old bath towel becomes woven of the finest gold. And if that isn't in your heart, when you put your yellow shawl over your head, it becomes an old rag. Mm. In the Christian book, it says, as a man believeth in his heart, so shall it be with him. Well, it goes beyond that. What's in your heart is what you are. How do you change what you are? You change what's in your heart. How do you love other people? How do you love your religion? Well, some would say, count your blessings. That's not bad. That's a good start. Now, all too often what we count are the bad things. And we keep a careful accounting of them. Every jot and every tittle gets written down in the book. Every slightest affront, every slightest hurt It's written down in this book in the heart, and the book is black, and it's dirty, and it's ugly. While over on the other side is the book of life and goodness that's barren. Oh, it may have a few entries in it, but the ones that we often are led by the force of darkness to keep, the accounting we're led to keep is the accounting of all of the bad stuff. It's human. And you'll say that endlessly, and people will say that endlessly to you. Well, I'm human. Well, you're half human. And you're half spirit. That's why we call you a human being. That's why you're not an animal. That's why you're a human being. Now, I guess it's up to you whether you want to be a human or whether you want to be a being. Whether you want to be spirit, mostly spirit and part human, or mostly human and part spirit. You got to decide. And don't come to me and say, make me perfect, Maitreya, because I will not make you perfect. That job has been reserved by God to each soul. Work on yourself. You know, when all these people came to Jesus and said, heal me, heal me, and heal me, the doctor came to him and said, heal me. He said, physician, heal thyself. You're a doctor, heal yourself. You're a spirit. Your job is to realize it and make it real in the world. And that, I've thought and I've written, and every night I sit and I write when I'm not too tired. And I've written, maybe it's courage, maybe it's honor, maybe it's dignity, maybe it's integrity. And the only thing I can come down to is it's love. Have you ever had a car that you really didn't care much about?
Yes,
actually. And what did it end up looking like? Did it have dents in it? Was the engine all crappy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You didn't invest much in it, did you? I mean, some people just get it given to them.
Yeah.
Or you don't pay much for it. I bought a junker and that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. But then you go out and you buy a new car. And what do? Especially if it's one you like.
Mm-hmm.
You're careful when you're backing up. You're careful when you're going forward. You wash it when it needs to be washed, when you can. You take care of it. You take care of the things that you love. When I was going to high school, I never had much money. I never had any money. I had to work at a gas station and scrape pennies to buy my first car. Yeah, I was a junker. The little Hillman, British car, had a bad valve. The guy sold it to me for $50. And I took it apart, and I fixed the valve, and I polished it every weekend with blue coral wax. Had little things that when you turn the turn signals on, they'd pop out the side with a light in it. It looked like a little miniature gangster car. It was a beautiful little car. I loved that car. And I took such good care of it. It was magnificent. And then one day I loaned it to a friend of mine, a good friend of mine. And it never came back.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out later that he was a druggie. And the police called me and told me it was found all bashed up somewhere out in Van Nuys, on a back street of Van Nuys, all torn up. And it would have cost me more to go get it than to buy another car. So I just told him to junk it. See, I loved that car. He didn't care. Well, that's the way it is with your religion. That's the way it is with your friendships. That's the way it is with your relationship with the souls of this world. Sometimes you say, well, you know everybody, my own. Yes, I do know everybody. I don't know that personality. I don't know what they do
mm-hmm.
behind closed doors. I don't even know what they do for a job, but I know that soul. And I love that soul, even though I despise the behavior of the person in this world. This whole world is my family. And just like in your family, sometimes you have to beat up on your brother if he's doing the wrong thing. Sometimes you have to beat up on people if they're doing the wrong thing. That doesn't mean you don't love them. But I've thought, and I can't come up with another word that embodies it. Where your heart is, that's what you treasure. And where your heart is means that you love something. You've all had a lot of jewelry. You ever lose your jewelry?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, or maybe something happens to it.
Yeah.
But you haven't lost your pendant.
No.
You love your pendant.
Mm-hmm.
So you take care of it.
Yes.
If you love it. You take care of the things that you love. And unless you love God, and you love God's eternal universal religion, and you love the Maitreya, and you love the Holy Community, because it's all part of God. Remember, you know, this isn't something that God whipped up out of a book someplace. God gave us this. And if you love somebody, when they give you a gift, you love the gift. Even if you don't like it particularly. I can't tell you how many weird-looking ties I've gotten in the past. But I loved it because it was given to me by somebody that cared. And I loved. When you love somebody, you treasure what they give you. And if you love God, then you've got to treasure what God gives you. And you've got to love what God gives you. And He's given us His eternal universal religion. He's given you the Maitreya. He's given you the Holy Community. And He's given you our holy cause and mission. These are not things to just know like some intellectual. These are things to love. How do you know what to do? Well, I finally come to the conclusion. If you love someone deeply, you know what to do. How do you know it? It's like magic. And if you really love somebody deeply, you know what to do to make the person happy. That's not always going to work if you're in a bad relationship, but if it's a good relationship, or while it's a good relationship, you know what to do. How do you know? It's almost psychic. You don't have to get a manual, a handbook. Would you think if somebody walked up to you after you fell in love with them and they fell in love with you and said, well, here's the handbook. This is how I operate. I'd fall out of love with them real quick. And you don't need a manual. Sure, we're going to write one. We're going to put together a holy book. But that's what bothers me about it. If you love God enough, if you love God's eternal universal religion enough, if you love the Maitreya enough, if you love our holy cause and mission enough, and if you love all souls enough, let me tell you, you will make mistakes sometimes, but most of the time you'll do the right thing. You don't need a manual. That is the manual. There is no way to love. Love is the way. There is no way to love. Love is the way. And love isn't something that just falls on you. People do fall in love, just like they trip and fall in a mud puddle. And in the beginning, you do fall in love with God's eternal universal religion. But unless it's going to be a one-night stand, unless it's going to be a fly-by-night affair, people do grow their love into a marriage, and they do grow the marriage into a lifelong loving relationship, and it takes a little work. So yeah, the initial fall may be like tripping and falling in a mud puddle. But turning it into something long-term or permanent takes work. That's why holy initiation comes without strings. But consecration, confirmation, and the rest requires the individual to work. When you mechanize anything too much, you destroy love. Mm-hmm. So you've got to give people just enough to guide them, and not too much. As a marriage family therapist, I can tell you that the worst possible thing that can happen to anybody is that they go to a marriage family therapist. Because by the time you get to the point where you're going to mechanize your relationship, well, now you give her this night off and you give him that night off, you do this and he does that, and then you have to keep an eye on each other and you have to make sure that you know, he should appreciate you when you're having trouble, and you should appreciate him when he's, you know, by the time you get to that point where you have to have the handbook, the relationship is dead anyway. How is it that so many hundreds of thousands of millions of people in this country in the past 200 years have fallen in love, gotten married, raised families, and stayed together for their entire lives without the manual? How is that? And since the manual has been written, since the books have been written, since the marriage family therapists have proliferated, whereas we used to have a divorce rate of about 10%, now we have a divorce rate of about 60%. Figure it out. FIO. Figure it out. When I was a photography student at Santa Monica City College, my professor, my teacher, Gil Brush, used to constantly pound the table, and he was a news photographer. He'd pound the table and he'd say, "Photography, love it or leave it. Because if you don't love it, you'll never be worth anything. You'll be a hack." You see, I wouldn't say that with regard to our religion. I would say love it. Because if you leave it, you lose perfect final union with God. If you see something that's wrong, if you see someone that's on a power trip or an ego trip, set it right. And make sure that everybody else is with you in setting it right, because a lot of times you'll think people are on a power trip or an ego trip, mm-hmm. and they're not. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to lead. So maybe if you take it to a few brothers and sisters and say, "Hey, this is what I'm seeing," maybe they'll set you right. They'll say, "We don't see it that way." You go, "Well, maybe I better look at what I'm seeing." You are not the final judge and jury of everything. It's got to be what's right, not who's right. And what opens you up to God's inner divine guidance, inspiration, insight, guidance, and revelation? And what opens you up to Maitreya's inspiration, insight, guidance, and revelation? Is it some tricky mechanistic form of meditation? Yeah. No, it is not. It's love. It's love and devotion. And devotion is a form of love. Discipline is a form of love. Discipline says, "I love this so much that I will endure hardship, pain, and suffering for its sake. For the sake of God, Maitreya, God's eternal universal religion, our holy cause, and all souls." That's what I did. That's why we're sitting in this room together, because that's what I did. And I take no pride, and I ask no laurels for having done so. I did it because I love God and I love all souls. I didn't even know about God's eternal universal religion when I did it. And it's also why I made my vow of compassion and won God's new covenant and supreme promise. So as much as I've thought, and as many years as I've thought, it all comes down to this one simple little word. Love. Not erotic love, not eros, not even philia or agape, but charis, that unselfish form of love that gives without asking anything in return. If there's a key to our religion, it is love. Caris. Philia is good, that's family love. Agape is good, that's brotherly love. Eros is not good, that's selfish love. It's not even good in a marriage. But charis is that kind of love which an apple tree has. An apple tree gives apples to anyone who walks by. It just produces apples because God said produce apples. But God hasn't told you to produce anything. You're free. So it's up to you to learn to love. And whatever problems are plaguing you, whatever is bringing you down, I promise you that if you learn to love without selfishness, that those problems will go away. If you go out and learn to love people so your problems will go away, they won't go away. That's why people say it doesn't work. They told me that if I just learned to love my husband, that I would be a happy person. And I've really tried to love him, and I'm not a happy person. Well, no, you're trying to love your husband for yourself. The Moody Blues had a line in their song that is so profound that it needs to be said. I don't know where they got it. Maybe God inspired them. And it goes like this. And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love that you've been giving has all been meant for you. That's eros. That's erotic love. Even if it's not sexual, it's erotic. It's for me, 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 I, me, mine. Strike those words from your vocabulary. And from your heart. Because the only way that you can have the blessings that come with loving is when you've forgotten about yourself and gone beyond yourself. And then, like the Beatles said, you may find peace of mind is waiting there. You will find peace of mind is waiting there. You'll find something more. So this is what we have to do. We have to make ourselves accessible. We have to put it out constantly. You don't have to preach to people and tell them to come. All you have to do is constantly put it out. It's like a beacon light. Those who see it and those who hear it will come. Sometimes by banging on them, like the Bible bangers do, you drive them away. Just try grabbing a kitty cat sometime, or grabbing a butterfly. They're going to run from you. But if you put your hand out there with something, with a little catnip in it, the cat will come. You put your hand out there with a little sugar in it, the horse will come over and nibble out of your hand. You just try to shove a carrot down his throat or something like that. So these are simple things, but they're things that get lost and they get forgotten. But this one word is the only thing I can come down to. I could eliminate most of what I've taught over the years. Because if people really did what I've just said, if they love God, the one universal God of all creation, who is within and yet beyond all creation, who we call by the name of Parapara, and Jehovah, and Allah, and Yahweh, and all of the other 3,330 names, Brahma, Brahman, doesn't matter. That rose is still a rose, and God is still God. But if you love God sufficiently, you love God's eternal universal religion sufficiently, you love the Maitreya sufficiently, you love one another and the holy community, not just each other as individuals, but the holy community. The holy community is the tide that raises your boat. Raise up the holy community and you raise up your own boat as well, so long as you're not doing it to raise up your own boat, but doing it to raise up all souls. And again, and very important, to love all souls. If you do that, and do it without selfishness, then all that you need will come to you. And you'll live a good life, and you'll live a happy life. Until you start worrying about your own happiness, and then you'll be miserable. Mm-hmm. As you always have been. Om Soham Tatvamasi. Om. We are that which you are. Om Jai Bhagwanji. Victory to that beloved universal I am that I am. Which you are. Jai Bhagwanji.
Jai
Bhagwanji.
Jai Bhagwanji.
I'd like you to get this put in a form where it can be sent to every one of the Maitreyans. But it's not just for telling others. It's something you have to practice.
Yes.
If there's a spiritual practice worthy of being practiced, this is it.
Okay.